SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, second half, and I'm just watching out, the window. Yeah, we're back. Sorry about that. I think we had a little drop. And I, you know, it's funny, Brian. Thanks for alerting me. I'm a little worried. That's exactly what I was worried about because of all this. You can't believe what's going on here. I should take a picture. There's more heavy equipment across the front of the house here, then it's nuts. And then fold in this tree demolition going on. Crazy. So I'm looking forward to heading out to California. And as mentioned, it is pre-entry day, and Wednesday they will give you the fields as selected. We didn't have a lot of time with Hammer on Friday, but he did mention that, you know, the committee will get together and they'll have a pecking order for any of the fields that overflow. And there's, you know, there'll be quite a few. So looking forward to our first the first pass that we'll begin to delve in to Breeders' Cup. Might as well get Anthony in here. And is a big day of racing at Finger Lakes today. Futurity being the biggest, but there's also the Genesee Valley Breeders, as well as the Jack Better Be Right, $250,000 stakes, and then the eighth, the feature, the New York Breeders Futurity. And, you know, because it's Futurity monies, $165,000 purse. And nice field. Field of nine. Got some interesting decisions to make because Maker brings the Violence Colt, who's been very good under whose radar. But, you know, his last two performances were on the grass. He certainly looked comfortable on dirt when he broke the maiden at Saratoga. So, under whose radar, pretty much the horse to beat. And a couple of the other options. George Weaver shows up with Fortune Farms Bold Fortune, the central banker, a romping winner at Aqueduct 4 weeks ago. 84 buyer as well. So absolutely from a fig standpoint is, you know, right in the realm with the favorite, with under whose radar. I know Gary's coming with Eddie F's Butta, the latest in the long line of Oyster and Chowda and now Butta. This one, Aaliyah Frick and Fedwell Farms. Bread coming off a chasing second, a fairly distant second behind Sacrosanct, that in the Bond Guard last month. But he was terrific closing day at Saratoga when he broke his maiden at a nice 11-1. You've also got Ron Lombardi, Mr. Amore, and he's got In the Chase, the nice weekend hideaway colt. That's coming back to the dirt after trying the Futurity behind the Menti, who's going to stretch out in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf. Anthony Stabile joining us on Futurity Day. Anthony, good morning.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm good. You got a big three-stake card anchored by the Rich Futurity today.
Yeah, looking forward to a big day up here. We got a when I was wrapping up the promos last week, I had a little fun with it Wednesday. I sang a little 12 Days of Christmas. We got the four claiming series finals, three steaks. We got the $2 hot dogs again, so you know I'm pumped for that. especially just looking to eat myself into oblivion after an NLCS loss. And $1.50 fountain sodas. So I'll do the ultimate fat guy thing. I'll eat 10 hot dogs and drink four Diet Pepsi.
I am sorry about the Metsies.
It's okay. Yeah. It was a long. I can tell you this. I was at the watch party with Mom last night, and it was a long drive up here this morning. This was a different drive that I've had in a very long time. So, but we're here. I was actually buying some hair gel because my hair is completely out of control at this point. The playoff beard and the playoff hair didn't have time to come off, so I'm gonna have to get it under control for the day. And as we get ready, yeah, you know, Futurity. I'm looking forward to the day. For those of you who don't really care for me too much, you may want to tune in for the fourth race today for the Unhinged, the Ironman. It's 14 furlongs. I don't know if maybe I won't make it. You never know. I have no clue if I can get through 14 furlongs. I've never tried. So it's about, you know, it'll be 3.5 minutes of mass hysteria. That goes as race number 4 on the 9-race card. And then we got the stakes. Yeah, you know, it's a fun race, the Futurity, because we have the usual mix, right, Steve? You have the horses coming in under whose radar, and he comes in for Mike Maker. You have Bold Fortune coming in for Weaver off a big win. And then you have, you know, my man Paul Barrow, my main man up here, Philly against the boys with Idle Gossip. Like you said, Mr. Amore coming in. Butter. Everybody loves Butter. And a horse that ran really well last week in his first, just his first dirt start, not for nothing. The race did not come back fast, but Melky Giddens unleashed a nice little horse in Carcone that day, and he's going to come right back. So, yeah, it's a fun little race. I guess under whose radar is the horse to beat off the maiden win. They were quick to get him to the turf after winning by a pretty easy margin on the grass first time out.
I agreed. And, you know, from a FIG standpoint, you know, the number earned in July, opening week at Saratoga, when he broke his maiden, you know, that would obviously makes him prominent here. And we are going three quarters. But the Weaver, you know, the Weaver and you know, Dylan Davis makes the trip. You know, quite a few guys come up. How about DeRaylu coming home to ride in the chase?
Yeah, he graces us with his presence. He did it. He won a race last week, actually, here in Finger Lakes. He came and visited us, his subjects last week up here in Finger Lakes, the globetrotter that he is now. I like breaking his chops about that. They love him up here. I mean, he is like... I don't want to go as far as to say he's like me and Howard Beach, but they absolutely love him out here. Yeah, I mean, he's here for the day, and Dylan comes up, and Manny comes up, and, you know, the last time a lot of these guys came up, they almost got assassinated by a tornado. That was all my fault. But, yeah, they were for New York Derby and Oaks Day, and Dylan, of course, took the New York Derby. And Manny won the Oaks, so yeah, they're back and they've had a lot of success up here. And you know, it looks like if you're a buyer guy, and I don't use a ton of speed figures, but those are the ones I do rely on the most. Rely is a strong word, but they are so far much faster than these rest of these horses in here that certainly looks like a two horse race. And I think you bring up a good point. He under whose radar ran so fast earlier in the year that. You got to think, and those two turf races under his belt, especially the Kentucky Downs race, he ran really well in the Kentucky Downs race, and you got to think just getting on that undulating course and going to six and a half plays more like seven, and it was just the second start. I mean, he's battle-tested, and he looks ready to roll in here getting back to the main track, so it should be a fun race, though.
It's a good race, and take a second before we look at the Jack Better Be Right and the Genesee. Explain the starter races, the program, and how this is the culmination of a series of claiming crown.
Like a little claiming. I encourage. We started after the claiming crown. They obviously had, we had all the state bred days, and then the claiming crown day came. And then some tracks started having their own claiming crown days. And I think it's fantastic because, as most racing fans are sports fans, and, speaking of the Mets, everybody loves the postseason, and everybody loves a playoff, everybody loves a bracket, everybody loves, people love drama of a final. It's a final, and you can laugh at me for saying, well, is there a lot of drama in four starter allowance races at Finger Lakes on a Monday? I'll tell you what, to the guys and gals that get up every morning and bust their butts to get these horses ready, yeah, it's a big deal. It's a fun day. These horses get to run for some money that they ordinarily wouldn't get to run for. We know, nobody's getting claimed. They're all going back to their own stall tonight. I think there's a comfortability in that, and I don't want to say you earned your way in because we don't have the fields aren't gigantic, but yeah, there was a point system, and we've been going since the summer with this series, and then there's the sprint for the boys, the sprint for the boys, and the sprint for the girls, which will and then the distance race for the girls. So the distance race for the girls kicks things off in the two sprints, and then like I said, the mile and three quarter race. So, a little bit of something for everyone and a nice way to mark the season as it goes along. And these horses were eligible to be claimed out of all of the races leading up to the final, the finals, which are today. So, you'll see horses in some different hands, but I think it's a fun way to keep the attention. They run for a little bit more money when they're in the series. And I think that's important. That's important at the smaller tracks. It's important to give some money away on the bottom ones of the claiming ladder and to protect these horses on the final day. I think it's a really good system up here.
Well, and looking at these fields, actually, they're very competitive. Second, the 6 furlong group, and Old Man Winter is 7-5, but doesn't have to win. By any means. I mean, the entry actually, it's 5-2, but not a big number. How about Brachmaninoff? 3-1. What's wrong with Brachmaninoff in there?
I got to tell you what, I'm always going to, I'm a Paul Barrow guy. I don't know if you wrestling fans out there, you're a Paul Heyman guy. I'm a Paul Barrow guy. I don't know what happened last time. He didn't see the lead last time. But I'll tell you what, when he sees the lead, man, he's fast. And it's funny to say this about a horse running for a nickel beaten. But he really sticks his chest out when he's in front. He's such a different beast in every sense of the word when he's in front. Like, you could see when he gets to the lead, he's just a different kind of horse. And don't let him get loose. Don't let him get a length on you. If he doesn't feel any pressure to his right or left, he's home Jerome most of the time. Hmm. It's over. He gets brave. Gonna Be Dancing, who's drawn right to his outsides fast. He's not Brachmaninoff fast. Cool Kathmandu, he's Brachmaninoff fast. And you mentioned part of that entry, and like we talked about, Cool Kathmandu claimed out of the last nickel beaten race from Ferraro Sr. and now runs for Amy Albright. Amy brings horses in from Thistle, and she's had a good season here. Half the runners have hit the board. She's won a couple of races, won a couple of nice pots, and Amy knows what she's doing. She brings her rider, Oliver Calderon, in with her. And then you have the other part of the entry, who's a different trainer. It's Tim Murphy. With Martin Kelly, he was on a three-race win streak at one point, and, kind of have the old come out with your hands up, we got you surrounded. They're going to have Cool Kathmandu on the front end and Martin Kelly coming from off the pace. So, they could utilize the entry well. And, you know, and there's great stories up here in these races, too. Like you said, Steve, Ed Schatzel, who owns both of these horses, Ed came to visit the booth the first week of the meet. Ed will help run these horses today. Ed will ship these horses from Penn up here. Like, it's really cool how everybody kind of has their hands on things, right? It's funny. I remember saying to myself yesterday watching the watching a Chelsea Flower and Peter Brandt, who's like a top five cool rich guy. Our love of wrestling has led to many funny conversations in the Saratoga box area. But you see Peter lead, and the Phillies' name's escaping me right now. See Peter lead the Philly in yesterday, and believe me, if one of these horses win, Ed's going to lead one of these geldings in. They got different backgrounds. They kind of do a little different thing in the morning. You know what I mean? Ed's in the stall, Peter's not. So, but that's the cool thing. Like, everybody up here, it's like an all-hands-on-deck approach. I'm friends with these guys, Boston Boys Stable. They own Left Leaning Lucy. They get in their car from Boston and drive 7 hours to come here and watch her run in a nickel-beaten race.
That's nice.
Like, it's really all-hands-on-deck up here. It's a lot of fun, and it adds to the day. I'll tell you one thing. Last week, the weather sucked in plain English. It was rainy. It was cold. Absolutely stunning here today. The temperature in my car doubled. At one point when I was driving through Liberty and Monty this morning, it was 36 degrees. It's now 71. So it literally doubled. Temperature doubled on my trip up here this morning. There's not a cloud in the sky right now. It's funny. The sun's behind me and the moon is to the north still. You can still see about half the moon. It's a beautiful day up here. And, you know, it's a great day to come out. Oh, I joke around about them. Everybody loves these Wagels up here. There's $2 hot dog. It's an affordable day. No admission. No parking. Yourself with Wagels. We got 9 for you. A little carryover in the pick six. You know, 2 pick fours, a pick five. It's a fun day. It's going to be a fun day today. You mentioned the other two stakes. We got probably my favorite filly up here. I'm a big, and I know we're not supposed to root, but I don't care. And it's not really rooting. It's just, you know, you have fun with them. Sweet Brown Sugar's in today. And she's such a cool filly, you know, last winter down at Aqueduct and now up here. You know, she kind of stubbed her toe in the 2-2 turn races so far that she's tried. New York Oak, but she did not embarrass herself at all. And then she had a terrible trip in the Fleet Indian. Everything went wrong from the start. She only got beat 7 lengths. She's back going the 2 turns, and the Jack better be right today. And I'll tell you what, they better tie on. But, you know, Oscar the Third has April Antics in there shipping up from the Big A. And you see Flint Styles with She's Dancing coming in from the Mid-Atlantic. You know, you have some of the local flavor. So even the Jack better be right has that little bit of, you know, Midtown Lights comes in for Carlos David. You have all of this. You have the melting pot up here today, and then we also have the Genesee Valley and Maker's Candy. You know, horses that are, if you play the Naira Circuit and you play Finger Lakes, these are horses that are, I'm saying household names, sounds ridiculous, but, you know, they're horses that you see every week.
Sure.
One of my pets up here, of course, by the name of Royal Suspect. And he's run 8 times this year, just 1 win, but boy, you want to talk about a horse that just tries his tail off every time, and he doesn't seem to like to win photos. He's very courteous. He lets everybody else win the photos. But he tries every time, and he's going to run for the 9th time today, and he's probably got 1 more start in him before the season's over. It's kind of like when I was doing all my Yonkers stuff, you know, you used to call on the same horses every week. They run 30, 40 times. They get their money's worth up here too. Believe me,
for sure.
12 starts in a 30-week season. So,
well,
but it's
and Presque Isle.
You
get the ones from Presque Isle too that come back every, you know, every 17 to 21 days.
Yep.
I'll tell you who I like in the Genesee, Anthony. Michael Simone comes up with doing it the right way. the Super Saver gelding. This horse doesn't miss too many boards, and ran into King of Hollywood in the last pair.
Yeah, a couple of King of Hollywood starts, neck, another one. I mean, 16 starts this year, 10 exacta finishes, and a third in there as well. And has had success here at the Lakes, 2 for 3 with a third. You know, loves the distance. Yeah, he's good. Like we said, we talked about Maker's Candy. Just got beat a length and a quarter to Bank Frenzy in the Shipman. Was third in the Kingston, which was off the turf, Spirit of St. Louis, and Disarmed. And, you know, he's got 199 buyer figures staring you in the face here. Manny and Mike Maker teaming up. Yeah, it's a little bit of, and it's really cool because we will have a good crowd here today. And it's a treat to see the Dillons and the Manny Francos. And it's
right.
Great because the guys, you know, knowing them from down home, obviously, you'll see how, like, when they're walking back to the room, they'll stop and they'll talk to the fans and give the fans some time. And it's really, our guys and gals up here do it every day too, but it's a treat for them to see, you know, people that they usually just see on TV up close and in person. So it's a fun day.
We always talk about that, like when Charlestown Classic, and I know some people say, well, you know, these horses come from the outside and they come and they, you know, the rank and file horsemen and the big outfits come in and steal the money. But, you know, part of the appeal is having, literally top 10 in the country type jocks, you know, show up you mentioned Manny, who's riding for Maker there in the Futurity, Dylan Davis, who's obviously no stranger. He's been coming up, you know, he's come in for big days at Finger Lakes for years. But Ray Lou, of course, who grew up in Rochester, and Lane Luzzi shows up for Gary and for Eddie and on Butta. The feature is terrific, 423. And, you know, if you're looking to bet multis, the sequence, starting with that late pick five, the pick five goes 8 by 10 by 10 by 9 by 10. I mean, you got big field sizes.
Yep.
And even those starter allowance sequence, the early pick four, smaller fields, but they're well matched. I mean, this is a really good card, Anthony. It should be a fun day.
Fun card,
gorgeous day.
Yeah, Racing Office did a good job putting the sequences together. And I mean, like I said, tune in fourth race and see if I survive. It'll be about 3 minutes and 20 seconds.
Call it like you call a harness race. You nice evenly paced. I'm sure the pace will be measured.
Johnny, I called me on a Sunday morning once and he gave me the old kiddo. I'm a little under the weather. I'm not going to make the double. Can you get over there? And I said, sure. This was at Belmont. And I think they were a mile and an eighth. And a mile and 3/16, one on the inner and one on the widener. And I was questionable at a mile and 3/16, a mile and 3/4. I mean, I got to take the under. I got to take the under of survival. It wraps the early pick four and see what the survive. I think the over under of Huffs and Puffs is 7.5 right now. That was set at 7.5. So we'll see if we could take the over. I would absolutely take the over. I'm on about 4 hours of sleep and 64 ounces of mom's iced coffee. So I would take the over on Huffs and Puffs at 7.5.
Well, it should be a tremendous day. Yeah, it is Futurity Day at Finger Lakes and the other two stakes and then the four special starter allowances. Anthony, I appreciate it. And you can see the finish line for the season from here.
Yeah, 6 weeks left, 18 racing days. If you're around this week especially, come on out. Today's going to be a great day, a fun day. We have we got this, the hot dogs and the sodas, like I said, all kidding aside, it's a fun day. Weather's beautiful today. We got some deals going on for the Breeders' Cup as well. So if you're in the if you're in Western New York, come spend Breeders' Cup Friday and Saturday with us at Finger Lakes.
Nice
idea. $10 wagering special. Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff happening in the next couple of weeks, and I probably won't speak to you, and I don't know what his status is right now, but if City of Troy runs in the Breeders' Cup Classic, he will be singled on every one of the big ace tickets, my friend.
Interesting. All right, so there's an early missive. I appreciate that. All right, City of Troy is a go on your tickets.
Yes, sir. I'm single. I think he will. I don't think he'll win. I think he'll gallop if he runs.
There we go. Well, he's all systems seem go.
That's what I've read. So, yeah, it'll be fun to see him.
Anthony, fun to talk. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Steve. Good luck, everyone. Thanks for listening and tuning in. We'll see you later. Hopefully, I get through all nine today.
I have every confidence. The Big A, Anthony Stabile, the A-Train, joining us on a big day, Futurity Day at Finger Lakes. We've got Rich Migliori standing by. And, in fact, and speaking of big-name jockeys who made the occasional trips over to Finger Lakes, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How are you?
I'm great. How many times over the years did you go out to Farmington?
Well, I won the Oaks twice. I think I was second in the Derby a couple times. I do have a good Finger Lakes story, though.
Let's hear it.
All right. So 1980, Steve DeMauro is going to start me riding that spring. That fall. And we were in Saratoga when it was a 24-day meet. We had three horses. One was the Sipiter's Hope that Dr. Gilman didn't want running on the NYRA circuit any longer. He was a two-year-old. He didn't like his ankles, whatever. So they left me with a groom for a week in Saratoga after the meet. And then Steven came back up, picked me up with the three horses and the groom. We went to Finger Lakes. And they told me I'm going to get to ride those three horses. That's where I was going to start my career. So I'm so excited. And we had one filly, Exquisite Gal, that had to get okayed from the gate. And the starter said he had to see me break from the gate. Now, I'd been breaking horses from the gate for 4 years already, but we broke out of the gate. I probably tried a little too hard, trying to show the guy like I was ready. And he turned to Steven and said, well, I'll let that filly run, but if that kid ever makes a rider, I'll be president of the United States. And he wouldn't let me ride.
Oh, jeez.
And I was crushed. I mean, jeez. I cried. I was absolutely devastated. So I didn't get to ride my first race until a few weeks later at Belmont. And then a Sipiter's Hope went on a mad tear at Finger Lakes, so they allowed him to come back. And I wound up the next summer winning my first $100,000 stake on a Sipiter's Hope at Saratoga. What is now the Albany was the DeWitt Clinton then. And he beat the favorite Adirondack Home with Ruben Hernandez ahead and paid, boxcars. But they wouldn't let me ride him at Finger Lakes.
Unbelievable.
Yep. So that was my first Finger Lakes experience. Me and Steven were staying in that hotel when you get off the parkway there, the throughway there, and I went back to the hotel. Steve, I'm going to tell you, I can probably count the amount of times I've cried in my life. That was one of them.
Well, you rebounded.
It worked out. Yeah, it worked out.
I would say.
It was all fun. Yeah. But I love that area. I love the Finger Lakes area.
Oh, it's the greatest, and we're there, I've been able, because of the grandchildren, we've been able to go more often, even than when I was in school, and, I traveled the area as a writer as well, in the mid-central New York, Madison County and Oneida County in that region, but we've been, Tina and I got married in the Finger Lake and the Thousand Islands. We've stayed lately in Finger Lakes a few different times, down to Watkins Glen and Skinny Atlas.
Nice.
And we're there visiting the kids and outside of Rochester.
That's great. That's great. It's a really beautiful area. And then what's better than visiting with the grandkids? I'm completely smitten. My yeah, grandkids have redefined my life.
Well, you're right. We were, and to shift into weekend recap mode, we were together at Far Hills on Saturday, and Rich is showing the grandchildren and the new baby, and this has been it's very special. I mean, it obviously for you, it's particularly. I'm grandfather by sort of by proxy.
But your heart is full of that same love, so the feeling is the same in that respect. I will tell you this: so we had Isabella up at the farm for a couple of days last week, and she's out, in the barn with Pampa and collecting eggs with the chickens. I don't think I'll ever forget her looking at me the second day, saying, "I want to ride my horse." 2 years old, I want to ride my horse. I was like, "Oh yeah, you, I know where you come from."
I love it. That is great. I mean, how old is the right age to, to secure them and let them, put them on a horse?
Well, she's been on the ponies already, but, obviously being held, somebody leading the pony and someone else spotting her, right? I think 4 or 5, they could start doing it, we're going to find out. I mean, unfortunately, Isabella's going to be the guinea pig.
Well, how about Gabriella? I mean, when did she start taking it seriously?
Well, we moved up to the farm from Garden City. She was 7, so she really started riding at 7, and on her own, riding ponies. And by the time she was 8, 9 years old, she was jumping fences, and so I think that's probably somewhere in that range, 5 to 7, where they're starting to actually ride and understand it and respect the horses and not get in a horse's mouth and things that are super important to Carmella and I as horse people, that there has to be a respect and a relationship there with the horse, not that they're just a vehicle for you,
Well, and when they get the bug, it's hard to turn them away.
I love the fact that Gabby got to experience Pony Club and 4-H, and there were times when they would be getting ready for shows that some of the girls, 2 or 3 of them, 4 of them, would come to the house the night before with their ponies, and they would braid them and get them ready the night before, and then we'd have a pizza slumber party, and then early the next morning we'd be trailering out of there, and it'd be in the dark, and I'd be heading down to Belmont or Aqueduct after the fact, after getting them all squared away. And, it's in the dark, and she's sitting up in there with me, and what is your fervent wish as a parent that you're creating memories that they'll have forever? I know I'll have them forever. It meant as much to me, too. So I was really happy that she had that experience, and obviously she's still with the horses.
I love it. Well, it's hard. You think about the Carroll kids, right? Aisling and Decky, and
tremendous right. riders, right? And now Declan, I was talking with him the other day at Far Hills. He rode in the John Forbes, and he's gonna start riding jump races. He's starting the next career as a jump rider. And he told me, my dad's not thrilled about it. And I said, well, I'm going to be honest with you, Declan, because I care about the kid very much. I've known him, and I worked for him. I'm not thrilled about it either. But I understand it. And I will say this, though. He looks so good since he was able to stop, reducing and watching his weight so hard. He just looks so healthy now. So I pray everything goes great for him, and I hope, he excels at that, which I'm sure he will. I mean, he comes from a horse family, but his mom and dad are both tremendous horse people.
For sure. Well, I know you must have been doing something because you wanted to push back to 11, but I had Jack Fisher on, Rich, and frankly, I took a lot of the clues for the conversation I took from, your post-race discussion with him. And, to me, the best part of snap decisions win? I mean, aside from, you know, just how indomitable he was in victory. I mean, he just refused to lose. Jack's satisfaction with this, after so many frustrations, you know, to keep a horse this sound and this ready for this long is really a tribute to him as a horseman.
Absolutely. I could feel his energy when I was interviewing him, and you know, Jack is amazing. And I was talking with him, and then I was talking with Guy Talsieri and Bill Gallo, and I said that win and the way Snap Decision did that absolutely will help create fans for steeplechase racing. His longevity, so people have had an opportunity to latch on to him, and to, you know, he's created a fan base. And then to win when he was beaten three different times coming up the straight. You were standing right above me. I was down, right on the track, and you were up in the stand right above me. I couldn't believe, you know, that the way he fought back, and he just refused to lose. Being a 10-year-old, I think it's important for people to realize, you know, it's not always age. And I know I like what Jack said about the 10-year-olds not being able to compete in New York rule. I still think I wish there was maybe a little tweaking to it, and maybe a little bit more judgment involved. You know, you've got 3 or 4 year olds that maybe shouldn't be competing, just because they're horses that don't like their job, and it's evident they don't like their job. They shouldn't be doing it. But then you get a 10-year-old that still has this kind of enthusiasm. I just wish there was a little more common sense approach and not just hard and fast lines about it. I know that maybe creates maybe even some legal difficulties. So maybe that's impossible. But, he brought up, I actually caught some of the interview because I was in the car. Four-star Dave. Yeah, four-star Dave when he was 10, he didn't want to do it anymore. And Richard Bomsey and I had that conversation after I rode him one day, and I said, Richard, he does not want to be a racehorse anymore. He owes nobody nothing. We got to stop, you know. And he agreed, and then he was entered like a week later at a claiming race with Kruge, and there was a huge uproar, and then Richard Bomsey, you know, thought better of it, and then we had the retirement ceremony for him. And they had me take him up to the quarter pole, you know, in between races, turn around and gallop in front of the stands, and everybody started cheering and clapping because he was such a fan favorite, much like Snap Decision has now become with the steeplechase set. And he grabbed a hold of me, Steve, and I thought he was going to run off. And I'm going, please, God, don't run off, because they're going to say, well, we got to run him again. He still wants to do it. And he was just getting incited by the crowd. And thankfully, I was able to hang on to him, and he didn't get away from me. But I thought he made some great points with that. One thing I've, you know, now covering Far Hills 3 years in a row that I've really kind of locked into is this is where we're seeing how important pedigree is because of the distance of these races. And Snap Decision having that deep, Phipps family pedigree running so deep and so many good horses, and the stamina that is, the stamina influence that is there from that pedigree going back several generations. I really can, like, I've made that correlation, and when you're looking at it, you go, man, this is what makes a great thoroughbred from that stamina influence. It's been really cool for me to cover that the 3 years and start to learn more about steeplechase racing and getting to know the horse people there even better. You know, I knew them a little bit. You see them in Saratoga High, you know, but now actually kind of creating relationships and really looking forward to seeing them. And obviously they're happy to see you. It was a great, great day of sport on Saturday. The weather cooperated. It was a spectacular day. And what I should have done was just come and had dinner with you and Tina, and instead I fought traffic, which kind of put a damper on the day, but I did get back to Belmont 3 hours later.
I don't know if you were within earshot when I was talking to Tom Morley. Morley walked around, he was slack-jawed at the spectacle.
He really was. It was funny, he walked up to me and he's like, well, it's just something, isn't it, mate? And I go, and he goes, we want to get something to eat. I said, just head out to the infield, you can make friends with people tailgating. They got great food, or those food trucks are awesome. So he went off, and I think he enjoyed it. Curbstone ran an amazing race in the John Forbes. I liked him. I thought he had a big shot.
So did
I. And there's another one. Right? I mean, huge price, too. What did he wind up going off at?
60-1.
That's crazy. That's absolutely crazy. I actually said that I thought he was a horse that would relish every bit of the 2 miles. And, again, you know, the Mosley family, deep pedigree, get the distance. We've gotten so far down the road with speed and precocity. And, you know, when did stamina become less important in the thoroughbred? It makes me a little sad. I like, maybe we get a little trend going with the Grey Wizard winning there and the Curbstone's effort. And, you know, we got the mile and three quarter race today at Finger Lakes. I'd love to see some of these marathons come back. Like, we don't run the Gallant Fox anymore in New York at a mile and 5/8. We don't run the Display at 2 miles and a quarter anymore. We used to have a starter handicap series for horses that, you know, had run for a claiming tag that started at a mile and went all the way to 2 miles and a quarter. And every 2 weeks, you know, now it would have to be more spacing. But back then, it was every 2 weeks, they would extend it an eighth of a mile. So they ran a mile, 2 weeks later, a mile and eighth, mile and a quarter, and so on, up to 2 miles and a quarter. I would love to see that again. We don't see horses work long distances anymore. I mean, you get horses training for the Belmont, they breeze 5 furlongs. Now they have these huge gallop outs. But back many years ago, they would work the full distance of races that they were going to run. We would blow horses out the day before they were going to work a mile or a mile and an eighth. What came to be known as the Jerkins miles, where you'd go the first half in 52 and the second half in 50, get a mile in 142. And Alan always had riders that could do it, that had good enough clocks, that knew they were going 13s that first half and then, you know, 12s and 12 and change the second half. I really wish we would kind of get back to that. We're never going to get all the way back to it, but at least somewhat.
Well, to the Breeders' Cup's credit, it ended up not lasting, but the marathon concept, which then, you know, had essentially a backloaded sequence of races that were feeding into it. The Greenwood Mile at Parks and the Brooklyn ended up becoming part of it. You know, they tried to, you know, back channel a series of races toward the marathon, and, you know, ultimately, what, last year they gave it up, and it's one of those, it's funny, Rich, it's one of those races and concepts when they're offered, when those races get offered, like the mile and a quarter maiden specials, they always fill. There's always trainers that know that they've got horses that need that race, that's what, you know, they're nice horses. But they're not fast enough to win, you know, at the bread and butter distances. But they're capable, you know, going a mile and a quarter and mile and 5/8 and beyond.
Yeah, I mean, like yesterday, the first race at the Aqueduct, you know, mile and 3/8 on the turf was a terrific race. 5 horses within a half a length of each other, you know, at the finish. And the horse shipping down from Canada for Chiefswood gets it done, Lane Guilford. I guess I got to be careful because, you know, I'm an old timer now, right? I don't look at myself like that. I don't, like, from the windows of my eyes looking out, I don't think of myself as a guy who's been in the game for almost, you know, 45, coming on more than 45 years, right? So you don't want to sound like, well, back in the day, but I wish there was some middle ground that we had a little bit more outlet for horses that maybe don't possess the same amount of speed, but have the stamina and let them excel, let them play to their strengths.
100%. Well, this beautiful day. I mean, it was so exquisite, Rich. I mean, especially coming on the heels of last year, which was rough. and soft, and it just, that's also part of the same discussion, right? The way horses have certain preferences for footing, and you know, some horses, in fact, Jack even said how the winner of the second, the maiden winner of the new McDynamo race, Manella Juke, that was a horse that Jack was surprised that he was comfortable with the firm footing. And then you look at Snap Decision, who, you know, last year and even the year before, his only two non-efforts on a chase course came on less than good footing. So it's one of the more interesting aspects. I mean, the staying power and the footing preference, and it's going to come into play in 2 weeks for Breeders' Cup.
Oh, absolutely. I think two huge factors, and particularly with steeplechases, but on the flat as well, is the ground that you get to compete on, and what horses handle which ground, who is confident. Sometimes people think automatically, well, firm ground, why wouldn't a horse handle firm ground? Well, a number of reasons, but a lot of it to me is there's more slide. When the ground is very firm, they don't dig into the turf as much, and they'll have a tendency to slip a little bit. And so if their hind end slips a little bit, their hooves make a little bit of a drag mark, they lose confidence, and they'll shut down. You know, uh-huh. Obviously some horses, you know, if it stings their feet and it jars them up, they're not happy about it. But me, to more, it's about the confidence in the ground that they're getting a good foot over it. And then the flip side of that is a horse that, he's just getting bogged down in it. And you see it a lot with heavier, you know, fuller-bodied horses, right? They carry a little more weight, and they just, you have to work so much harder to get through the ground, so they're not going to excel on it. And wait, you know, and I think, you know, you look at Snap Decision, his prep for the Grand National, he was given 12 pounds to Sevastopol, right? And now equal weights. And he gets firm ground. Like, I thought he was a slam dunk. I didn't think he was going to have to work as hard as he did, and he showed unbelievable gameness and courage. But, Jack made a good point, too, though, when I interviewed him about, you know, he's 10, and, you know, he kind of saves himself a bit and does what he has to do. So every time he felt the challenge, oh, I got to do a little bit more, you know, that kind of thing. And that's why one of the many reasons, a confluence of things, is at 10, he's still as good as he is. I think, obviously, Jack Fisher plays a huge role in that. The fact that they have real breaks. You know, horses compete. They make less starts, but they compete year-round now. Where the steeplechase horses get true breaks, where Mother Nature can take care of any little nicks and dings and bangs or any aches and pains they might have. And they're athletes, so they're going to have them. Where, you know, years ago, you know, come the late October, November, guys were shutting it down, going to winter quarters, whether it was Camden, Aiken, Ocala, you know, Hialeah, and get a few months to really let down. And you don't see that now. So now they're making less starts, but they're spread out over a longer period of the season. And you don't see the same longevity. I think that plays a huge factor in it. Having the opportunity just to be a horse, be turned out, sun on their back, and you know, not the pressure and the rigors of training and racing for 2 or 3 months before you gear them back up, and then they can give it to you hard for 7, 8 months. You know, the game is evolved so much in that respect, and you know, I feel blessed and fortunate that I got to witness, you know, the old school way, and you know, understanding the economics of the new school way. But again, I wish there was a little more of a middle ground.
Well, and this is, you know, this is a tricky discussion. Not in terms of you know, what the turnouts and what, you know, the winters off, you know, historically did, you know, going down to South Carolina, that kind of thing, you know, and horses, you know, getting that freshening, you know, the economies of the game, you know, changed, obviously.
Sure.
But, yeah. I mean, the way in which, one of the things that's fascinating is just the way in which these horses, the way they're handled is so, you know, just different and interesting. I mean, you think about what Todd McKenna, if for those that never heard Todd last year with me after Noah and the Ark won the Grand National, Todd McKenna has a completely, even by steeplechase standards, he's got unorthodox habits and practices training horses. Very different. But, you know, I went out one Preakness week, got a chance to go out to Mr. Naylor's farm, which is one of the great unique features of going to Pimlico. You literally can go 10 miles west of Pimlico.
Great.
And you're in Maryland countryside. It's unbelievable.
It's like when they switched from in the Wizard of Oz from
black and white to color.
Yeah.
it's amazing. And Cyril Murphy said, you know, do you want to come out to the farm? And I went out there, and you know, in between their starts at the hunt meets, and you know, when they come to the racetrack for Colonial and now Aqueduct and Saratoga for, you know, jumping at the flat track, they get turned out in these gigantic paddocks. I mean, they're out there training themselves ostensibly. They're chasing each other around. Like Jack said earlier today, he gets on Snap Decision one day a week, and Graham Waters gets on him 6 days a week, and they just, you know, they ride out. It's like when, Rich, I'm sure over the years you took horses across the street out the lowlands, right, at on the Oklahoma side, and take them over on the trail rides.
Oh yeah, and there were trails too back behind the rec center. You know, they wound up, they had the Skidmore horse show there for a number of years. They kind of cleared out, but there were trails back through there. You'd hack horses all around there. When Alan Jerkins originally trained Rubiano, before he ever started, he had him for Centennial. And he was a real high-energy, tough, high-energy horse. And I had started working him in the mornings. You know, like two or three days a week on my day off, and if I was done early riding, I'd go to Alan's barn in the afternoon. I'd hack him all over Belmont Park in the afternoon because it was so good for his mind to get out of the stall and you know, use himself. He would get too pent up and too worked up about things, but that was a great outlet for him, that he could, you know, just go be ridden and not, you know, have to be asked to gallop or go fast or just hack. I'd disappear. I would say, go ride him till you're tired. And I'd go off and I'd come back half hour later, maybe more, so... You know, horses need that as well. And for all the people that, you know, love to say, oh, well, they make them run. Well, go to a farm. Take the time to actually learn and not be ignorant and just espouse your opinions. And go watch horses in a field and watch how they run around and they play and they buck and they chase each other. And watch how, you know, one wants to be dominant in one way and another might be dominant in another. Like, I get a kick out of my place. I watch horses. I'll just sit out there some days and just watch them. And a horse that's, like, kind of the dominant herd leader might not be the dominant herd leader coming to, you know, coming in at night at the paddock fence. You know, he'll run the so-called leader off, but the leader might run him off at the hay bales, right? Like, it's just interesting to see their dynamics and how they do things, and they actually really do enjoy running and racing each other. They do it without us, so that's my little rant, because I get sick of hearing people tell me about horses that don't know anything about horses.
Well, and that also I always trot out in that discussion. I always trot out the people who used to complain about the diving horse. You know, horses trained to go out on the platform and dive into a pool. They do it in nature. the horses will get up on a body of, you know, a pond or a lake, and they'll jump in like that. It's not something that they don't, you know, that they need to be prodded. Nobody's got a cattle prod.
I am so happy you said that, because when I was a kid and I became friends with Carlos and David Figueroa, who's still both immersed in the game. Carlos is training again. David is, you know, he's training a little bit, but he's doing more on the breaking and training side. He's got a place down in Aiken. We would ride ponies to Belmont Lake State Park, and I had the coolest pony I would ride down there, Cochise. He would see the lake, Steve, and take off with me and run right into the lake. I couldn't stop him. I probably weighed 80 pounds, right? But he would run off into the lake, so much so that I used to have to ride him bareback because he ruined my tack running into the lake. And he loved to swim, and he would get, I don't know, 70, 80 yards from the lake, look up, his ears would go up, and I go, here we go, boys. Whew! He would take off and just dive into the lake. So, you know, they have personalities. They have things they like and don't like. And I guess this kind of goes back a little bit to what I was saying about that hard and fast rule at 10. You no longer can compete in this jurisdiction. It's an individual thing. You know, if a horse loves his job, and he's happy doing it, you know, people think that the horse retires and they send him to the farm and they're happy as a clam in the paddock. I gotta tell you what, there's a lot of horses that go to the farm and they're not happy because they don't have a job and they don't, you know, they don't idle well. I mean, it's like people. There's some people, myself included, I will work probably till the day I drop because I like to work. I don't like idle time. I don't have something to do. I feel like I'm wasting my day. And horses are similar. There's horses that really, of course, there's horses that want to sit on the couch and eat Malamars. I mean, you know, like
Malamars.
I don't know where I came up with that one. I don't think I've ever had one. But
you never had a Malamar?
Nah, I don't think so.
Well, it's Malamar season. You know, they can't ship Malamars during the summer when it's too warm. The chocolate melts. But once the temperature's cool, like September, then they start shipping Malamars.
You know, now I'm going to have to try this, even though I'm not a sweets guy.
Forget about it. You triggered me with Malamars. I'm crazy for Malamars. And my mother really loved Malamars.
That's great. That's so great.
That'd be a good name for a horse, actually, Malamar.
No? Malamar season.
Malamar season, exactly.
Steve, I'm counting on you.
Too funny. What? Anything back at the Big A that we want to slip in?
I thought opulent. Chad Brown's filly. What's it?
Opulent. You're right. Opulent
restraint.
Something.
Opulent
restraint. There you go.
She, you know, that was a terrific race. Her and Pony Ducho's filly ran some race, and to put it in proper context, you know, yesterday they ran the Awad, on Saturday they ran the Awad, and the colts ran nearly 2 seconds slower than those fillies ran on Sunday, and the ground was the same. You know, you can't make a case that, well, the track was any different. This was turf, and we didn't have any weather that would have changed the conditions. And I thought that was very impressive, and obviously with her pedigree, and her look. I mean, she is absolutely the spitting image of her dam. So, you know, I thought that was, you know, really tremendous effort. I mean, it was another beautiful day, too. Like I said, I went from the bucolic setting of Far Hills and kind of the purest form of our sport and you know, the tailgating and, you know, you're out in the countryside to Aqueduct, but I love Aqueduct too. So I grew up 9 miles from Aqueduct, Steve. I still take a ride to the old neighborhood once in a while.
Well, we talked Saturday. Tina's never been to Coney Island, and I've only been once in the last probably go back. It's got to be when I was living in the city, in Jersey. It's probably been. I went once in. I'd say 25 years. So,
well, we're going to make that happen. We're going to go. Yeah. We're going to go to the aquarium.
That was some story you told about your uncle.
Yeah, my uncle Bill passed last week, and he's 92. Lived an amazing life. Started out as a fish feeder at the aquarium. A high school dropout. Grew up in Coney Island. And wound up working his way up to being the foremost aquarist in the world, built aquariums everywhere, worked for SeaWorld, built the aquarium in the Inner Harbor in Baltimore. His expeditions with Jacques Cousteau and, collecting whales and dolphins and sharks and spending time in the Amazon and the Arctic and, just a life as well-lived as possibly could be. And he was... I'm going to get a little emotional. Extremely good to me as a kid. I would spend a lot of time. He would take me to, when they lived in Pittsburgh, because he ran that aquarium for a while, I would always spend a month with him, him and my Aunt Dee, who was amazing, and my cousins. And then when he was running the New York Aquarium, Staten Island, I would spend part of the summer with them in Staten Island. And, for somebody that didn't finish high school, I didn't finish high school, grew up in the same neighborhood, he instilled an idea in me that anything was possible if you were willing to work hard enough for it. And I don't know that I ever fully articulated to him how much he instilled that in me and how much he meant to me. And I think gave me, honestly, the brass ones that I had to think that I could actually make it in this game and leave home at 14 years old and, live on the backstretch. A lot of that was because of him and his success, but also his adventurous spirit. He meant a great deal to me. And I had a couple of wonderful conversations with particularly my cousin Kathy about him, his daughter, over the last few days. He kind of sent me down a couple of roads, thinking, just about my upbringing and what a key role he played.
Well, and you told Tina and I about him. It's like a movie story. I mean, literally, Horatio Alger type of a thing. I mean, sent back to get a marine biology degree, and just amazing.
Yeah, I mean, truly amazing. All my cousins did so well. My cousin David became an extremely successful dentist. My cousin Billy wound up taking over the business because when he retired from being a curator and director of these aquariums, he built aquariums. So Billy's company, my uncle's company that Billy took over, his son, they got done refurbishing the New York Aquarium not too long ago. And Kathy lives in Hunt Country in Maryland, down in Maryland, because they moved there while he was building the aquarium in the Inner Harbor. That was his complete project. He did it all. I guess he really butted heads with the governor at the time, Schaefer, with Bill Schaefer, who they have the name race for on Preakness Day, because someone wrote in one of the comments in his underneath his obituary, I bet he's up there giving Bill Schaefer a piece of his mind right now. And my uncle was a tough guy. He was a guy to be reckoned with. I think that was part of the reason why he was so intrepid that he could, I'm going to the Amazon and I'm collecting, pythons and this and that. Honestly, it could be a movie. Genuinely could be a movie. And the original curator of the New York Aquarium that he was working for as a fish feeder is the one who encouraged him to go back, get his GED, and helped him get his, go to college, get his degree. He was training dolphins at the New York Aquarium even before he went back and got his high school diploma. So really an amazing life. I'm sure you read the obit I sent you, right?
I have not read it yet. Because I drove out and then drove home after the football game yesterday. So I'll read it after the show.
Check it out. It's pretty cool. And then if you Google him, in one particular article, they had collected beluga whales in Hudson Bay up in Canada, and polar bears came and were attacking the beluga whales in the tanks. and they wound up shooting one of the polar bears, and they were in big trouble because they're an endangered species, but they were trying to save the whales. And that article is pretty eye-opening. It was a little bit of the Wild West at that period of time, I guess.
How about that? Richie, before we wrap, I also wanted to slip in, and I even toyed with having him on together with you, but I'll get him later in the week. Rajiv back under saddle yesterday.
Yeah, it took me a little by surprise because I didn't know he was playing it, and then I heard last week that he was named on some horses. And first and foremost, congratulations to him and his wife, Angie,
on
the baby, Lila. Which I think is really cool.
It's a great story.
His first graded stake on Lila, so he named his daughter Lila, and I actually broke Lila's maiden for the Chiefs. So it's so funny how we all connect in one way or another. And listen, if he's happy and he wants to go back to riding, I fully support it. I will tell you this though, and this is as candid as I can be, and I love Rajiv. I always get a little bit envious when these guys go back to riding because I never wanted to stop. I me and Carmella had this conversation a few times, and I said, I wish that I had won a big race, patted the horse on the neck, and said, it's been good, boys, and that's it. And I didn't get that opportunity. And she looked at me and said, you were never going to do that. You were going to wait till they carried you out, which they essentially did.
Right? 100%. 100%.
Yeah, so it is what it is. I mean, people don't realize jockeys now ride into their later years. I mean, I think Johnny Velasquez is an absolute marvel. The first thing you see go with riders is their legs. I see no deterioration of Johnny's legs at all. He looks just as solid as he did 20 years ago. And that doesn't mean you can't ride anymore. There's riders that are still doing it that don't have the same legs they once did. They make up for it with their experience and their savvy, and they're just great strategists, great race riders. But Johnny to me is a marvel, and I was done at 44. And these guys are going into their 50s now, almost 60. I mean, Raj is coming back at 39. 44, I was finished. I still, and this is going to sound probably dumb. I just had this, I was fixated on getting the 5,000 wins, and I would have, if I hadn't missed 37 months of my career from injuries, I would have done it even if I had to stop at 44, but, listen, I no complaints. It was wonderful. The riding end of it was wonderful, and the game is still being wonderful to me, so I can't really cry about anything.
Yeah, nicely put. Rich, a lot of fun Saturday. And I'll see you later this week. We're coming down Thursday for Landauer's race on the nightcap.
Yeah, I won't be there Thursday because I'm going to go to Mary Broman's wake. It's out in Babylon, and I have to. I've known those people since I'm 13 years old, and I groomed their kids' horses at the Knoll Farm when I was 13 years old.
Wow.
I was making $40 a week, and Chester Broman would come to the barn. Every time he came to the barn, he'd give you $20. That's half your check right there. That's supplementative big time. And I wound up winning a Florida Derby for them, and I actually groomed horses for them when I was a child. They were an integral part of my career.
Oh, I'm glad it came up, too, then. I mentioned, beginning of the show, I mentioned her passing and... thinking of Chet and the whole family. One of the nicest things I ever saw at a Breeders' Cup was the scene when Bar of Gold won the Filly and Mare Sprint. People so happy for the Bromans to get that level of a win.
Kindest, most generous people I've ever known. Mrs. Broman was like a grandmother to me. She's amazing people.
Yeah. I'm glad we had. Glad we got to that. Well done. Thanks, Rich.
Steve, look forward to seeing you. Thanks. I'll talk to you soon.
You got it, Richie Migliore, everybody, and Acacia. Just had a chance to say hi to Acacia and Joe. They were up the stretch, so you really didn't get a chance to interact with them on Saturday. They had like a set that was sort of midway up. up as the hill at I'm sure those of you that watched, you know, you saw that, you know, the horses come uphill after that last jump. And that's why that course is so demanding, because, you know, you've already gone 2.25, 2.5 miles, and now you're coming uphill for the last jump. And then they have to finish. So they put the TV set for where Acacia and Joe were, and Richie was it was a free range Migliore. He was able to wander around with the mic, and so Pat Morrell is going to join us to close out a busy Monday, and it's closing week at Presque Isle, and we do have a nice steak today, actually, and a nice sequence late, but I wasn't going to let closing week come and go, Pat, without a thank you and a congratulations on a great season.
We did. We had a really great season here at Presque Isle. There's no question about that.
Well, so, four more cards.
Now we got to look forward to next year. That's what we have to look forward to.
Well, and what have you planned for yourself for a freshening?
Well, Cass and I will be incredibly busy. We just got our offer, except that we bought a farm up here. We probably have rocks in our heads, but yeah, I mean, it's just basically for her retirees, and you know, I only really have one broodmare because I can't race horses anymore. Obviously, I'm a racing official, so, and my broodmare, she's pretty much my favorite horse I ever had, and you know, she just became a Grady Stakes producer, so we're super excited about that. You know, she had Icona Mama run third in the
right.
Pocahontas. She didn't do any good for that, unfortunately for me, but it is what it is. And, you know, she still has one more PA stake this year, so hopefully her owners will get a victory with her this year, and maybe we have a chance at the 2-year-old filly of the year. You just never know. So we're excited about that. But we're really excited about getting the little farm and having our horses in the backyard, you know, and having a big run for the dogs. So that's... The dogs, I think, are happier about that than anything. So that's the way it goes.
Well,
yeah, we got the stake today. We have the 12th running of the Mark McDermott today. We did get a scratch, Steve, so no dancing on air. That horse has been scratched today. We're down to a field of 5.
Which kind of
a little bit of a problem, but, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, sometimes you hate that. But, I mean, it just looks so much the boy's warrior. You know, these Warriors rewards are just near and dear to my heart, obviously. I got Stallion for clients here in Pennsylvania, and he's just been phenomenal as a sire here at PA. And this horse, you know, very versatile, can be close to the pace, you know, a little bit closer, and come from out of it. He did that in his maiden special weight back on August 28th, got the victory there, then came back in the whistle pig at Parks on the dirt. And that horse just absolutely galloped 1 by 9,
yeah.
Drew off that afternoon. I think we're going to see the same of that again.
You know, it is interesting. The Girton has also got the other, you know, Warriors Reward partners.
Ballad of Warrior, yeah.
Ballad of Warrior.
Yep. So, you know, that horse ran decent in that AOC.
Yeah.
That was a heavy-duty AOC. There's no question about that. And also, you know, just missing the stakes in the 56 and getting stakes placed in. Won the maiden special weight first time out. You got to love seeing that. And went off as a brace. 7.5-1 that day. Pablo Morales is back aboard here today. Tactical stocking pace. I think it's really, there's really only 3 horses in the race, I think. And that's going to be, obviously, the Boys Warrior, Ballad of Warrior, and Shadow Factor, a horse that is out of the 2-year-old filly of the year in Pennsylvania. Amy Ferreira Fowler, this colt by the Factor, ran third in the Victoria. She'll be back on July 19th. You know, Ron Potts has a little program. He wins with these babies, these juvenile horses, right off the bat, and then they always end up going up to Woodbine to run in the stakes because they always have the 2-year-old stakes. So he's always done very, very well doing that, and he's going to add the blinkers today too. So going to put those on, and maybe that's the magic, you know, the magic bullet that he needs. But Hugo Villagomez back aboard here today for the third time. So I think this was going to be solid. Might surprise
everybody a little bit. I still think they're all going to chase the Boys Warrior.
Boys Warrior.
He just looks incredibly good.
Look at this. I want people to look at the sixth and the seventh too, Pat.
Sure.
That enhanced my interest in you know, obviously closing week, but it's a very nice late pick four sequence going 6 by 7 by 12 by 11. There's a nickel claimer to closes
right.
it out. But talk about that second level allowance sixth and forgotten
sure.
piece. Here's Gertin again with the favorite.
Well, Gertin's just absolutely ripped it up here at Prescott. Nobody can touch him this year. Pablo Morales back aboard here for Forgotten Piece. She's going after what? Win number six in a row. She's just such a monster. You know, she doesn't really have a lot of page to her. She's a jersey down, which isn't a bad thing, but she's won 14 times here at Presque Isle. Timmy's putting her back in for 40 because that's really all she's eligible for. She's not eligible for any allowance conditions. She's already blown those out of the water. I like her again today. I've got her on top. She's a big fan favorite here at Presque Isle. Good tactical, stocking type pace. It's going to look good against, you know, triple R rated. He's going to play catch me if you can with this mare, Randy Russell is, with the daughter of Clint. She's going to roll on the engine. She's looking for win number four in a row. And what's crazy is today, I literally just got off the phone with him a little bit ago, and that's Kevin Rice. Kevin Rules just ran a Keeneland. It doesn't show it in the program here for Presque Isle. He ran the horse at Keeneland on Saturday. He's running her back again today.
Wow.
Horse has a lot of speed. Yeah. Yeah. How about that? So, I don't think I could have done it, but I also really like Time for an Angel, though. This Philly by Not This Time, you know.
Steve, that's the other horse. That's definitely the other horse.
Yeah, he's the inside for sure. And this horse is solid. A third, a second, third, last three starts, all in allowance, offshore claiming conditions, and ran third, only beating three quarters to Forgotten Piece, and she gave her fits last time. She was trying to get there. You get Gallardo, he's leading rider, and you get John Burke. For Commonwealth New Era Racing, a very nice horse. I got 3-7-1 in there.
What about the seventh, where we're going to go three turns, mile and a half starter option?
Mile and a half, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
That was a little bit wide open, but here's the thing: we're going to have two horses that are going to roll on the engine. You're going to have the four Runaway Harry, who's been a monster. He's been a boss here at Presque Isle, and then you're also going to have another horse called Flawless Bourbon coming out of the same barn. Not 100% sure they wanted these two to run against each other, but I think it sets it up perfectly for the 5-4 Starship Empire. Blinkers off today here with that horse. He just was compromised. There wasn't any pace last time. They went to the half in 50-1, so no pace. This horse is going to get it today. Nobody pushed Runaway Harry last time, and to be quite honest with you, Bonnie Allen just walked the dog, and that was it. But guess what? Starship Empire and Flawless Bourbon, they're going to go out and they're going to beat each other up and soften everything up on the front end. Starship Empire looks to be in a great spot. You get Chili Willie Martinez for Scooter Davis today. Absolutely excellent. He's going to exit out of that starter optional 10. Come right back in here for the same price, too. Should
interesting.
Another horse, too, Colt. Go ahead, Steve. I'm sorry.
Well, I was going to say there's an interesting jump horse angle in here in terms of fitness and the distance. Beowulf, Tom Garner, who of course rides plenty, and I don't know how much riding Tom is doing these days, but this is an interesting placement.
Right, and this horse by the Great Camelot. You don't see that very often here in America. Coming out of those hurdle races, and like you said, Steve, should have a ton of air in those lungs,
yeah,
without question. And sometimes we do use that angle. The hurdle horses coming in here to go to the flats. He's going to add blinkers today. You get Gadiel Martinez. This horse has shown some speed, but that was also going, you know, 2.5 miles, too, or 2.25 miles. So that's a cool angle to use. I did not use it. I'm being completely honest. I threw the one in, our man Mike, coming in from Mike Ferraro's barn. And this horse, a winner the last two times in the starter optional. But that's also on the dirt. But, Steve, look at the pedigree. By Street Boss, out of the tail of the cat mare. I don't think it's going to be a problem for a time synthetic.
Well, and then we got a couple of minutes. And before I ask you you know, to wrap up the season. What are you doing in the Nickel Claimer Nightcap?
In the Nightcap, the getaway feature. I thought it was kind of easy, to be honest with you. I love the tooth, Thalberg. And Louis Roberto, the conditioner here from Miguel Oguin. And Miguel is a groom on the backside and an absolutely incredible horseman. He used to gallop, Frankel. He used to gallop Frankel in Ireland.
How about
a long
that?
Time ago. Yes. He's amazing, great horseman, made a sharp claim, came right back, won with the horse, ran second, then fourth. Now he's going to drop the horse back down to the nickel level. Horse has tactical speed. I think this horse is the play, a son of producer.
Well, then this is actually, you know, you can approach this late pick four pretty tight. It sounds the way you're laying it out. All right.
Yeah, I mean, now, could somebody upset the apple cart? Absolutely. I think you're probably going to have to go three deep, though, just in case he doesn't show up. I like Gray Charm a little bit, the son of Temple City. Actually, still a horse, still intact. He ran second last time out to Aerox, the one horse there, and the horse has been running open. But I think there's some better horses that run for a little bit better money, especially Thalberg has a little bit better class behind them than some of these other horses do. Tony Small's been scratched out of that race. That was the 11, so I like that horse a little bit, but he's been scratched. The 5 El Solitario also out, but that's kind of where I'm leading. And Yachty, how about Yachty? This might be your price play. This horse has great back class. You never know when he's going to show up, but when he does, he's solid. Gadiel Martinez up aboard here for Team Rosans.
Well, Pat Morrell with us as Presque Isle enters the closing week. It's been another good season, a safe season again. And give us a quick survey of where things stand in terms of standings and how it's going to close out.
Well, it's going to be business as usual, Steve. Obviously, this last week, and we had, without question, the greatest Masters Day we've ever had. The handle was unbelievable. We did 2.6 million, and some places do that in a race. I understand that, but for us to do that kind of handle is absolutely immense. We're going to try and expand on that. I think we did a great job collectively as a group. The people that I work with are amazing. There's no question about it. And it's, I'm just so happy, that Matt Ennis, our director of racing, gave me a shot with my ideas that day. And, he was instrumental in getting everything, approved, basically. And we did, and it worked. And I'm just glad that it didn't stay because it would have been my head on the guillotine if not. But the fact of the matter is, without Matt helping me along with all that, I don't think it would have happened. I'm just so appreciative of him for doing that. And I think we have the greatest fans. We have some great, great fans. I mean, they're not throwing hot dogs at jockeys like they do at Aqueduct sometimes, but, they always show up. And, this is a big racing community here. And the night that we had Masters on that Friday, it was like it came out in droves, Steve. And I'm so upset you weren't there. You had to go to Parks the following day. But, in that wager, we did really well with that wager.
It's a good jumping off point. Introduced, and it's been a fun season. We'll wrap it up as well with Dick Powell on Wednesday. But, Tim, as you mentioned, Tim Girton and the Warriors Reward people, their leading trainer owner. And
right.
On the jockey front, we're going to end up where? With
Gallardo. Gallardo
ran away.
Question. Yeah, he's rolling. Pablo Morales is doing great, too. But you got to remember, too, they got a great agent in Paula Bacon, and she really hustles those horses. They've got a great name, collectively together, the three of them. And, of course, they ride the best horses. There's no doubt about that. But, they still have to win with them. And Paula can only get a place on him. She can't ride him for him, too.
Hmm. Timo, thanks for a great season, and congratulations on the farm. No, my pleasure.
All I can tell you is, Steve, I think you're absolutely amazing. You got the best podcast in the world, as far as I'm concerned, with the greatest game played outdoors. So we appreciate you so much at Mescal, how you really embrace, you know, I think it's America's biggest little racetrack. And that's what I always say on my show.
You've done a great job. Nah, I appreciate it. You've done an amazing job raising the profile and promoting it. Pat Morrell, everybody, PMO, and
thank you, there you go.
Thanks, buddy. There's your Monday, and thanks to Pat and Jack Fisher earlier as well. Matt Sims, a lot of fun talking to Matt, Rich Migliori, and Anthony Stabile for the big day today as well at Finger Lakes. Replay 6 to 9 here, Sirius XM. Archive podcast after some post-production. I'll talk to you in the morning. Thanks, everybody.